Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all. We're going to be thinking about that passage and some other passages as well in a moment or two. Well, we've reached the final sermon in our series about what it means to worship God in spirit and in truth. We've been looking at the last four sermons. We've been looking at the worship that goes on and is described in Revelation 4. And we've seen that it's completely God-centered. It's spirit-led, it's endlessly enjoyable, and today we're going to look at how the worship is unashamedly extravagant. And actually we're picking up on our second value here. You might not be able to see it behind the flowers, but our first value is totally Jesus, and then the second value is extravagantly loving, expressing our Father's love through worship and community. So we're really picking up on that value as we finish off the whole series with thinking about how true worship is unashamedly extravagant. I wonder, have you ever seen something extravagant and thought to yourself, what a waste? Or maybe you thought to yourself, that's so over the top, so excessive, I would never do that. I remember reading some years ago about how much money Elton John spends on fresh flowers. He reportedly has fresh flowers in every single room of his house every day. And he famously spent £293,000 on flowers in one 20-month period. So, maybe we think that's a bit excessive. Or how about, this caught my attention, probably some of you as well, how about the recently completed Sagrada Familia Cathedral in Barcelona? It took 140 years to build. It cost 700 million euros. It's the tallest church in the whole world. Extravagant and wasteful? Or something that gives glory to God and therefore good? I wonder what you think about that. You can discuss it over coffee. Well, we see in Revelation 4 and also Revelation 5 that worship in heaven is extravagant, unashamedly extravagant. Picking up from Revelation 5 and reading at verse 11, "Then I looked and I heard the voice of many angels, numbering thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000. They encircled the throne and the living creatures and the elders. In a loud voice they were saying, 'Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and strength and honour and glory and praise.' Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and on the sea and all that's in them saying, 'To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be praise and honour and glory and power for ever and ever.' The four living creatures said, 'Amen,' and the elders fell down and worshipped." This is unashamedly extravagant worship going on in heaven. And not just the four living creatures and the 24 elders, but thousands and thousands and thousands of angels and all of the creatures in the earth and under the earth and so on, continuously and endlessly praising God. And they will never reach a point where they say, "Oh, that's enough. That's enough worship now." This worship goes on day and night, night and day, for eons. And that's not the only example or occasion of unashamedly extravagant worship in the Bible. There are others too, and we're just going to look at them now. The first we looked at before, actually, you may remember this from an earlier sermon, in 1 Chronicles chapter 23, verses 1 to 5, we see that David is planning the worship for the temple, and he sets aside 4,000 Levites to focus on sung worship in the temple. And we might read that, and maybe some of the people in that day back then thought, "Wow, that's quite a lot, isn't it? That's a bit extravagant, isn't it? But, you know, it's a lot of manpower. Perhaps we could have used those 4,000 to, get rid of some of the potholes in the roads or provide healthcare or something like that. That'd be a better use of all of these 4,000 people, wouldn't it?" But no, says David. He was unashamedly extravagant for God, for worship, to make it a top priority. to invest in it, to organize it so that it was done well, because God is worthy of our extravagant worship. And we see another example of David and his unashamedly extravagant worship in 2 Samuel chapter 6. David and all his men went to Baalah in Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God. David and all Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord, with castanets, harps, lyres, tambourines, rattles and cymbals. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might. Now notice, they were all celebrating with all their might. They weren't holding anything back. They were just giving everything they had to God in worship. And notice also how David was dancing before the Lord with all his might. David is also worshipping with everything that he has. Every atom of their bodies is straining in worship towards God. They're unashamedly, especially David, unashamedly extravagant. And in fact, if you know the story, you're familiar with 2 Samuel chapter 6. David was so extravagant in his dancing that Michal, the daughter of Saul, told him, you look undignified and vulgar. That's what she said to him. But David said this in reply, I will celebrate before the Lord. I will even become more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. So he wasn't embarrassed or ashamed of worshipping in this extravagant way, of dancing with all his might. He knew that there is nothing worth celebrating more than the Lord his God. And that's why he absolutely went for it, even if he did look a bit undignified at times. And our next example of unashamedly extravagant worship is from the New Testament, the passage that we just read in John 12, especially this bit. Then Mary took about half a litre of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. You may remember from the reading that this perfume was worth a year's wages. Incredibly expensive perfume. And she used all of it on Jesus. And she was unashamed. She wasn't just extravagant, she was unashamed to kneel at Jesus' feet, wipe his feet with her hair, despite the risk of accusations of improper behaviour towards Jesus. She did it anyway, despite that risk. We don't know where she got the expensive perfume from. Elise Fitzpatrick, commentating on this verse, says, perhaps it had been gifted to her as a dowry for a hoped-for betrothal. If that was the case, she had just given away her chances of marriage. She was laying it all down, her future husband, her respectability, her reputation. She gave it all. Everything was now gone except her worship for Jesus. And here's the thing. Jesus welcomed that worship. And he affirmed it. He protected her with, he defended her with his words to those who were kind of looking down on her. Because he welcomes unashamedly extravagant worship. And that's how our worship should be. Like David's, like Mary's. Unashamedly extravagant, worshipping with all our might, giving all we've got in worship to Jesus. You see, nothing we could do could be more extravagant than what God did for us. God didn't hold back. God didn't skimp. He gave us all his love and power and grace because he gave us what was most precious to him, his beloved son. Jesus gave him up even to death. And through Jesus, he gives us welcome and forgiveness and love and power and grace and compassion and hope and a future and so on. And we see this really, really beautifully expressed in the parable of the prodigal son. We see God's extravagant love for us in this parable. So if you're not familiar with the parable, I'll just quickly run through it with you. So there's this son, and he demands his inheritance from his dad, which was beyond rude. It was effectively saying, "Dad, I wish you were dead. I just want your money." The dad gave him his inheritance anyway, and he went off and wasted it with prodigal living, excessive living, spend, until it was all gone. And then he comes back. But the father not only forgives his son, he welcomes him back. He runs to meet him. He reinstates him as his son, puts the ring on his finger, says, "You are my son, no doubt about that. I'm telling that to everyone here." And so it's a party, a wonderful party, because he's so delighted that his son has come back. And the elder son, it's not just the younger son that treats the father badly in the parable, the elder son treats the father badly too, but the father still welcomes him, despite him treating his father badly. And the parable is a picture of how extravagantly generous the father's love is for us. Because we're meant to read the parable and see the father as God and us as either the older or the younger son. And we're meant to say, we treat God badly, but he still welcomes us back with open arms, generously. The late Timothy Keller, in his book, The Prodigal God, makes this really astute observation about the parable. He says, "The word prodigal does not mean wayward, but recklessly spendthrift. It means to spend until you have nothing left. This term is therefore as appropriate for describing the father in the story as well as the younger son. The father's welcome to the repentant son was literally reckless because he refused to reckon or count his sin against him or demand payment. This response offended the elder son and most likely the local community." So he's saying this, we call it the parable of the prodigal son, but it's kind of the parable of the prodigal dad as well, because prodigal means wastefully extravagant. And the message of the parable is God's love to us is so extravagant that some would look at that and regard it as a waste. But he gives it anyway because of his extravagant generosity. Jesus did spend until he had nothing left, didn't he? He spent his sweat, he spent his blood, he spent his tears, he spent his life until it was gone for us. God's love for us is unashamedly extravagant. And so our response to that love should be unashamedly extravagant worship. As it says in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, in the Message translation, "Watch what God does, and then do it, like children who learn proper behavior from their parents. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us." Love like that. Worship like that. God is calling us to be extravagant in our worship because of his extravagant love for us. And he's calling us to this kind of worship both individually and collectively as we gather If you remember from earlier on in the series, we looked at how there are kind of like two types of worship in the Bible. There's individual worship, where we surrender our whole lives to God. And we looked at Romans 12, 1 and 2, and thought about how our individual lives are lives of worship. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. But we also worship together, gathered worship, where we join together for specific acts of worship. And God is calling us to be unashamedly extravagant, both in our private individual lives of worship, and then also when we gather together in our corporate worship. He's calling us to give everything we've got in both those aspects. But what might that look like in reality? Well, here's a few suggestions, and I'm sure there are lots of other things besides these, but here's a few things that come to mind. First of all, as we've seen from Romans 12, unashamedly extravagant worship means offering our bodies as living sacrifices. In other words, being prepared to make costly sacrifices for God. That might exhaust our bodies, maybe. That might use up a lot of energy. But we're doing it for Him. We're exerting ourselves for Him. Extravagant worship also means holding nothing back from God. We sung that song at the beginning, didn't we? Single-minded. Being completely devoted to Him. Obeying Jesus by radically eliminating sin in our lives. Taking away from our lives anything that might grieve the Spirit. Recommitting ourselves to total, complete dedication to God. Extravagant worship might mean forgiving our enemies, because forgiveness is a really true and pure form of extravagant worship, I think, because it's in response to God's forgiveness to us. And it's truly extravagant, because not only not treating our enemies as they deserve, but it's giving up our right to get even, and it's even loving them too. Can't really get anything more extravagant than forgiveness of our enemies. That's how God's treated us. And then extravagant worship could mean going out of our way to help people, going the extra mile, turning the other cheek, living generously and sacrificially, even if it costs us. And it's always a response to God's extravagant love to us. That should always be the place from where it comes. Remember, nothing we could do could be more extravagant than what God did for us. So it's treating Jesus like Mary did. Remember, that perfume was worth a year's wages, a lot of money. God invites us to worship Him with how we generously use our money. And it's worshipping God like David did. Remember how he worshipped God with, a little bit of effort. No, with all his might. He just gave everything to it. He wasn't, he danced before the Lord. He wasn't constrained or fearful about what others might think about if he moved a little bit. He just went for it because he was taken up in joyful abandon to God because of all that God had done for him. So as we finish the sermon now, and actually finish the whole series, let's just take a moment to be silent and pause before the Lord. And let's think about and pray about what our own unashamedly extravagant worship might look like for each of us. What is God calling each of us to do for Him in terms of this type of worship? Thank you so much for sharing. It was really good to hear what God's been saying to us as a church, both, you know, individually, but also we can learn from each other, can't we? We share in this journey together, this journey of worship that God's taking us on. I want to say a couple of things as we finish. First of all, this sermon, I've largely addressed those of us who are Christians. But if you're sitting here and you're not a Christian, you don't belong to God, you haven't repented or turned to Jesus, I just want you to know that God loves you and says, come in, welcome, you're welcome. Remember that parable, you may have thought, I've wandered too far away, like the prodigal son. God says, no, I'm here with my arms open, just come to me and I'll forgive you. Such is my extravagant love. Hear that message. Know how God welcomes you and respond. And the second thing I want to say is this. When we hear about this kind of worship, unashamedly extravagant, and we look at these sorts of things and maybe the life of Mary and David, and we do some self-examination, we can often think, I fall so far short of that kind of worship. I certainly feel like that and know that I fall very far short of that kind of worship. If we feel like that, what we must do is this. We must come to God, confess our failures, our falling short, and then remember God's extravagant forgiveness for us and move forward in spirit and in truth. The truth is, it's only through the Spirit that we can make this kind of worship a reality in our lives. So let's not any of us try to worship God in our own strength. Remember John 4:23. True worshippers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. The Father doesn't seek kind of manufactured worship, or us trying really hard to worship. He seeks worship that's in the Spirit. And when we believe the truth of what God has done for us, what he promises to continue to do for us each day, what he is preparing for us in the future, our hearts will worship him in the Spirit. And then we'll find that we'll be like those which Claire quoted last week in Isaiah 35:10, singing and crowned with everlasting joy. Unashamedly extravagant worship comes from the spring, the source of the Spirit and of truth. So let's focus on the Spirit and focus on truth, and we'll find that that kind of worship flows from that. God bless you all. Been a really good series. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And back to Cleaver Allison.